Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Artist First World Radio Network, home of the best new music you've never heard, and home of the best new talk shows you need to hear. Please don't forget to visit our archives page at www.artistfirst.com, where you can hear all our past shows for free and on demand. You are tuning into Unique Life Starring You. This show airs every Monday at 10 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. For more information about this show and listen to past shows for free, please visit artistfirst.com/unique.htm, and that's Y-O-U unique. And don't forget to follow Artist First on Twitter. You can find us under the Twitter handle at @artist_first. And now here's your host of Unique, Susan Stackpole.
Thank you, and thank you, ladies and gentlemen, for joining us here on Y-O-U unique Life Starring You, which is all about you and for you. And we are what we are because of you, so thank you so much. For those of you just joining us, or those of you who have been with us before, we have a little project here that we call Pray It Forward. There is scientific evidence that supports the fact that prayer and meditation and loving thoughts change the vibration and can actually benefit those that we're sending that energy to or that we're thinking about. And we ask that if there's a lot of disconcerting things in the media and people who are just going through some really challenging transitions right now. And so we just ask that if you see those things, just send a little love their way, because we believe that makes a difference. We are just delighted to have with us tonight a really special guest. Her name is Lisa Coffey, and I'll tell you a little bit about Lisa, and then we will welcome her to the program. She's got a lot of great things to share with us, especially helping us get started at the beginning of the year here. Lisa is a lifestyle and relationship expert, and she serves up an inspiring blend of ancient wisdom and modern style on her website, Coffey Talk, and that's CoffeyTalk.com, and in her newsletter. She's the host of a web series on YouTube, links, and other online outlets, and she is a best-selling author here to tell us today about her new book, What's Your Dharma? Discover the Vedic Way to Your Life's Purpose. She's often called the Dosha Diva, and she's world-renowned as the authority on Ayurveda and relationships. Her book on the topic is What's Your Dosha, Baby? Discover the Vedic Way for Compatibility in Life and Love. Lisa is a sought-after guest expert appearing frequently on television and radio, and she contributes to many national publications with her insightful, compassionate approach to modern-day issues. Her email newsletters are enjoyed around the world, and her subscriber base is 40,000 and growing. She has appeared on The Today Show, Good Morning America, Fox News, Before and After New Movie, The Morning Show with Mike and Juliet, and other national and local TV shows. She's been featured in Glamour and Women's Day magazine, among others. And she's done satellite media tours and has represented companies such as Mattel, Pier 1 Imports, Nintendo, Smuckers, Jaren Fine Jewelry, A Better Sleep Council, and more. She's traveled the world giving presentations on her ancient wisdom, modern style philosophy, and currently you'll find Lisa in California with her husband Greg, and between the two of them they have 5 children. She's a vegan who loves to cook, and many of her websites are on her website, and she also shares her heart as the board of directors for the Big Brothers and Big Sisters of Ventura County. We are just thrilled to have her here with us. Welcome to the program, Lisa.
Oh, thank you so much, Susan. You have the best show. I just love it.
Oh, well, you just are the best. So it's just always such a joy and honor you to welcome you on the program. You just bring such wonderfully inspired information, and it's so appropriate what you talk about sharing wisdom. And it's just, you're one of those people, you just always have a little something for everyone, which is great.
Thanks.
Yes. So, Lisa, for those of our listeners who may just be being introduced to you for the first time tonight, let's just give them a brief intro in terms of how you came to discover your passion and your purpose for helping others. Sometimes people come into that, and maybe it's something you knew at 4 years old that you just found yourself just, you know, already kind of wanting to know how people work and how the world works, or is that something that came to you as you started to grow and mature?
You know, now that you say that, this is interesting, because I'm thinking back, and I remember that, gosh, before I could drive, so I was probably like 13, 14, we had a little car wash in our neighborhood, and I insisted that we give the money to the United Way, and we had to ride our bikes to give the money to the United Way. And then my friend and I, John Janovich, we used to make up shows and go around to senior citizens' homes and perform because we had a captive audience, you know. And I think from a very young age, I just always was like, what can I do? How can I help? You know, and who's going to pay attention to me? So so I think I was always doing that. And it's interesting because now my kids, they've been around me and you know, I guess they can't help but be influenced by me. My son Brian is really into philanthropy, and when he just graduated from college, and what he used to do on Friday nights when most college kids are out there, you know, having a party and getting a cake and all that stuff, he invited all his friends over to his dorm room. They had an assembly line, and they made peanut butter and jelly sandwiches and then drove downtown and handed them out to all the homeless people.
Oh, my God.
Every Friday night. I mean, this was like his fun for him. Just like, let's do this, you know.
I love that. And it's such a lesson, I think, too, Lisa. I think sometimes we all think, oh, what can I do or how can I help? And we feel like it has to be in such a big way. And that's just such a little thing. And I think that that's a great, I appreciate you sharing that story with us because I think that that's such a great example of just letting yourself being guided and being led to saying, what can I do? And what a great thing.
Right, and no limitations. It doesn't matter how old you are, how young you are, where you live. There's always an opportunity to serve somewhere, somehow. Just, you know, let your heart guide you.
Right, and one of the things, too, Lisa, and we can get into this a little bit more during the show, I think it's just such a good example, too, about this idea of, which is something I would imagine having become familiar with your philosophy about life and that sort of thing. Let's talk a little bit about the importance of self-care, because I think what happens is sometimes if people don't feel fulfilled in their own life or they feel like something's missing in their own life, sometimes they have a hard time reaching out to others. And so I was wondering if you could speak just really quickly on this idea of the importance of self-care and sort of filling up your own cup so that you have that, you know, that incentive or that ability to give to others.
Yeah, I think people don't realize that the very first relationship we have is with ourselves. And that's what we have to care for, is ourself. And it all comes back to that. And when we come, you know, in every book I talk about this, when we come full circle and closure, we come into the world by ourselves. We're going to leave by ourselves. This, we learn about our spirituality, we learn about God, we learn about the world through ourselves. This is our vehicle, and it's this microcosm, macrocosm, the universe and us. And when we meditate, it's going from outer to inner, inner to outer. You know, oming means the whole universe coming in through us and finding our true self, and then bringing that true self back out into the universe to share with everyone else. So it's definitely important to take care of ourselves. And at this time of year, you know, here we are in the Northern Hemisphere, Ayurveda says that it's Vata season. It's cold and it's dry. This is when most illnesses happen. Vata is the lead dosha. And of all the illnesses there are, something like 80% of them are Vata imbalances. So it's really important to keep our Vata in balance and keep ourselves healthy, body, mind, and spirit.
Oh, I think that's so important to mention, too, especially at this time of year, people are recovering from the holidays where maybe they overindulged a little bit and that sort of thing. And I think on the physical level, people are often very committed at this time of year to get things on track and moving in the right direction. And I think it's important to have that focus where it's mind, body, and spirit to sort of get everything moving in that direction.
Right. So, I mean, because it's all interrelated. I mean, I think a lot of people probably have the resolution, I'm going to lose weight, I'm going to get in shape, but lose weight in terms of the clutter around your house, the things that are bogging you down emotionally, you know, getting rid of toxic relationships. all that kind of stuff. It's all interrelated. So we can take care of ourselves in those ways as well.
Lisa, as you're mentioning that, something that just came to mind that I'd love to have you share a little bit with our listening audience about. It's interesting because I think sometimes so many people will say, oh, I want change, and okay, my life is here, and I want it to be this instead, without realizing that sometimes for change, what it means is letting go of whatever it is that we have in our hands so that we can, or in our hearts, so we can literally make room for whatever new thing that it is that we desire to come into our lives.
And that's right. It's like, are you holding out an open hand, or do you have this clenched fist?
And I was wondering if you could speak a little bit about people who maybe are fearful of change. I think there's a lot of people who the last couple of years have just really felt like they've been sort of hit out of nowhere with different things that just, if you would have asked them 5 years ago, that they, you know, that normally they're planners and they just didn't see this coming, and they're just feeling really not grounded. They're just feeling really sort of scattered, and so they're almost afraid, like, okay, well, if I make this choice, then what's going to happen? They're almost immobilized by fear. What advice would you give them for stepping into a place of change and letting go of relationships or clutter or whatever it is that maybe is keeping them where they are instead of where they desire to be? What advice would you give them?
Well, you know, change is always good. We might not see it as such at the time, but when we come to a place further down the line and we can look back, we can see that we're better off. I've never heard anyone who has, like, cleaned out their closet or gotten rid of a toxic relationship that has said, oh, I really regret that. I missed that jacket. Oh, I should have kept those jeans. They don't say that. They're like, you know what? I feel so much better. I feel lighter. My life is easier now. We just have too much stuff, and it just weighs us down. So, you know, let it go. And letting it go is such a kind of an overarching concept of let go what doesn't serve you anymore, not just the stuff, but the people, the relationships, the goals you set for yourself 6 years ago that you're still feeling guilty that you haven't met. Change them, you know, if you make a different goal, whatever it is, we have choices, we have options.
Oh, I love that. And I think that that's such an important thing, because I think that what happens is people get into a place of that, well, I made this choice and it was wrong, and so, or not wrong, but they felt like, you know, the bottom just sort of fell out, and so now they're saying, oh, I'm afraid to make any sort of choice at all. I just have been seeing that a lot, or they feel like, well, if I give this away, there's not going to be any, you know, that if I give away the clothes in my closet, there's not going to be anything to replace it, or that now I'm going to have an empty closet. And so I think sometimes people are facing that as well.
I mean, that's very common. It's like why people overeat. They're afraid of having an empty tummy, an empty cupboard, whatever it is. They just fill themselves up. But what you need to know is that you are perfect and complete and whole just as you are, that you really don't need anything. You know, that's part of what we're going to talk about in the book, too. What is real? What is not real? What is permanent? What is not permanent? What is, you know, what can you really grasp onto? And the truth is, it's love. It's spirit. It's divinity. It's God, whatever you want to call it. You know, that is what is important in your life.
Ah, that's so beautifully said, Lisa, and such a wonderful lead into the book. And I'm going to come to that in just a second. Just wanted to mention about, because I think it's such a great time of year, and I think it's a great, actually, precursor, not necessarily necessary, but your book, What's Your Dosha, Baby? And the resources that are available to people to sort of get their physical body and mental, to sort of get everything aligned, especially focusing on the physical of getting things aligned. Sometimes I think that just allows the flow to begin and to start, and to now have moved on to What's Your Dharma, Baby? Is fantastic. And so let's talk a little bit about that, Lisa. Share with us, what was your inspiration for this book?
Well, it's interesting because pretty much, like in... I think it was 1998 when I first met Deepak Chopra, and so I've been so inspired by him. He's become a mentor to me, and I love everything that he talks about, and he's the one who really introduced me to Vedanta. And I remember sitting at one of his classes when I got the inspiration for What's Your Dosha, Baby? Because he was talking about Ayurveda from a standpoint of our health, and I kept thinking, this really also applies to the standpoint of the health of our relationships, you know? And what if I combined, like, Linda Goodman's book, Sun Signs, and matched up the different dosha types and looked at how their relationship works and the challenges that they would have or the strengths that that relationship would have. Well, I'm pretty sure it was in the same lecture that he started talking about the four yogas. And I talked a little bit about the four yogas in the What's Your Dosha Baby book, just kind of a summary, kind of an overview, because they have always appealed to me. Something about them just really resonated with me, that this is so beautiful, and there's so much depth to them. There's so much truth to them. So I started thinking about, you know, where I'm at in my life, and really my whole career and everything has been kind of through personal growth at whatever age. Like when I became a young mother, it was the parenting stuff, you know, and then when I got a new marriage, it was closure from the old relationship onto the new relationship, you know, and kind of as we evolve. And I think in 2012 particularly, this is a year of shift and change. And last year I went through a lot of stuff. I turned 50. My son got married. Both kids graduated from college. I had my 10-year wedding anniversary. It was like a lot of shift, a lot of change, a lot of new beginnings, you know. And I started thinking about, well, in 2012, that's what the year is all about. You know, we're shifting from the age of information to the age of inspiration. We're changing from being consumers, which we've been for so long, to being citizens, which we were always meant to be.
Oh, I love that.
And I think a big part of that is people are saying, well, what's it all about? Well, what am I here for? And it certainly is a lot more than just our job. You know, it's not just what we do for a living. What is our purpose? And, you know, Deepak, when I learned to be a meditation teacher, you know, he said, when we start our meditations, we ask three questions of the universe, and we don't look for the answers. We just put them out into the universe. And that's, who am I? What is my purpose? What do I want? And I thought, okay, how do you answer that question, what is my purpose? Nobody can tell you what your purpose is. You have to discover it for yourself. It's such a journey that you have to take. And then, you know, I started looking at the four yogas, and I said, really? These are the four dharmas. Dharma is a Sanskrit word, and there are 16 different meanings to it, believe it or not. And Sanskrit is so layered that it can have all the meanings at the same time if you apply it correctly. But it means lessons or teachings. It means holding things together. And it also means purpose. So I thought, you know, our dharma is our purpose. And we're looking for this meaning. We're looking for this purpose in our life. We're looking for what holds our life together. We're looking for what are our lessons in life. And I think I found it in the four yogas.
Oh, I love that. Oh my gosh, Lisa, there's so much you just said in that last sharing that you just did. One of the things that really stood out at me, for me, and then we'll get a little bit more into the different distinctions in the book, is that I love, and I just think this is such an excellent example, that the way that you've created your life and really have sort of found what seems to be really a fulfillment and feeling grounded and being able to share and really blossom is really kind of recognizing what's going on with your life and how to heal or move forward and that sort of thing, and then sharing that with people. And the reason I mention that is for some reason, I don't really know why this came to mind, I was thinking about how Taylor Swift, when she got into songwriting, they asked her, well, why that? And she said that she had seen that her dad was really passionate about being in the financial world, and she just wanted something that she felt that passionate about, that she could just sort of really get into. And it's just that passion that she has for that, just really, I just feel that same passion for you. And I would love to share with you, with our listening audience, that I think some people would look at that and say, oh, but that's really being selfish. I need to go out and get a job, and I need to provide for my family and that sort of thing. And I think it prevents them from connecting with their true purpose, from what it is that they're really supposed to be doing. Because I think across the board, and I'm sure there's a million examples that we could all think of, that of people who are really doing what they love. And I think sometimes people just think that it's not possible for them. So I'd love to have you speak a little bit about helping people get to a mental place of breaking through limiting themselves. Because I think as adults, more and more and more and more people say, oh, well, I've got bills to pay, or that would be a luxury to think about if I didn't have three kids at home and a spouse and that sort of thing. How do people get beyond that to a place of just stepping into possibility and allowing those things to flow?
Well, this is the thing. The law of relationships says, one, that we're all connected, and two, that we're here to help each other learn and grow. So no matter what your job is, you can be in your dharma. You can be serving your purpose. The four dharmas apply no matter what your job is. So you can be a bank teller, you can be pumping gas, you can be a plumber, you can be the CEO of a company, you can be a movie star, you can be a best-selling author, whatever it is, and be in your dharma. It's not what you do so much as how you do it. And that's a big aha moment for a lot of people, you know. I think that's really important to know. And we're all really, when it boils down to it, we're all really living the same life. We're all learning the same lessons. It's just, what is our learning style? How, you know how in, when you talk about education, there's people who are auditory learners, there's people who are visual learners, there's people who are tactile learners. Well, this is kind of, the four dharmas are kind of like the four learning styles. So how do you best learn your spiritual lessons that you're here to learn? How do you best express yourself creatively?
Oh, my gosh. I love that. And one of the things, Lisa, that I've found with people, that a lot of things, and I just have had so many conversations with people about this recently, is self-judgment. There's a lot of people right now with everything that's happened, especially within the last couple of years, that because it's almost like they don't know what else to do, with not having the answers about, well, why did this happen? They're sort of beating up on themselves of saying, well, I wish I would have made a different choice, or I wish I would have planned for this, or I wish I would have done differently. And that's the quickest way to sort of stop the flow and to stop any sort of connection with God or yourself or others. Share with people a little bit about how to step out and release that space of self-judgment that they might be in.
Everything happens for a reason. I know that just sounds so trite, but it's so true. And whatever, you can't have any regrets, because whatever you decided and had that choice or made that decision, you learned from that. You became a better person. You know spirit better and yourself better because that happened. So you can't have any regrets. It all happened for a reason. It all brought you here to this place in time. And this place in time is going to bring you to an even better place in time. We don't grow backwards. We can't make mistakes. There's no way we can make mistakes. There's things that we learn from, and we can look back and say, oh, if I had done that differently, blah, blah, blah. But you never know what woulda, coulda, shoulda, because that wasn't what was meant to happen. This was what meant to happen, and that's why it happened. It was supposed to happen.
I think that's why the movie It's a Wonderful Life is so affirming for a lot of people, because it's that journey that I think a lot of people wish that we could take, of like, oh, but if I could only go back and see what it would look like if it were like this instead. And so I think that that's a really excellent point that you're making, Lisa, because I think that it's all those things that keep people from being present. And that's really where our only power is right now in being present. And that's one thing that I love in all the creating that you've done, is just creating and maintaining the space of reminding people about possibility and the fact that what you chose before, what you did before, none of that really matters other than you get to make a new choice now, whatever that is, and how to best express yourself and come into this sort of best version of themselves.
Exactly. And the more you learn and grow, you know, the closer you get towards transcendence or liberation or freedom or enlightenment or whatever you want to call it, you know, because there's a million different names for it. The closer you get to that, the better choices you make, because you kind of have that intuitive sense of what option is going to work out the best for you, what direction it's going to put you in life that would be best for you. So, you know, we're compelled to move forward. It's part of our nature to learn and to grow, and we want to experience these things. So it's all good.
As you were saying that, this idea of just divine alignment came into mind of that really isn't that what it's all about. There was a quotation I read recently. It said that if you can't see God in all, then you can't see God at all. And I think it was like a Chinese proverb or something like that. And so I love that. And this is, I think, really what your wonderful new book is helping people do. For those of you who may just be tuning in, we're here with Lisa Coffey, www.coffeytalk.com, and we're talking about her new book, What's Your Dharma, Baby, which I believe the website is whatsyourdharma.com. Is that correct, Lisa? Okay. Lisa, let's delve into the book a little bit to give people an idea, especially when you start to talk about yoga and that sort of thing. I think that people are like going, well, wait, especially when you get into meditation and stepping into themselves and that sort of thing. Let's just jump right in and share with us what is it that going into the book that you would like our listeners to know?
Well, yoga is more than just downward facing dog. Yoga is not just the exercise. In the West, that's what we've come to think about yoga. But yoga is really a very deep philosophy. And the word yoga means to unite, to join. And basically, you can think of a yoga as a path. So these four yogas are really four paths. And what they're joining is where we are now to where we want to be. And how do we get there? And these paths show us exactly how to get there. And there are four paths. And they're not linear, they're not parallel or anything. They all intertwine and intersect. And we learn the same things from each path, just in a different way. So you can't say, oh, you know, I'm a bhakti, but I didn't learn what karma yogas are learning. You're all learning the same stuff, but it's just, and you're getting to the same place, you know. It's just in a different way, something that resonates with your own personality. So to kind of figure out which type you are, I came up with this very simple, fun, light quiz that you can take online at whatsyourdharma.com. And Dharma is D-H-A-R-M-A. And it's also in the book. And it's just, you know, silly questions like, if you're going to go see a movie, what kind of movie do you want to see? And there's four choices. Or if your friend is sick, how do you take care of your friend? Or how do you choose to take care of your friend? You know,
right.
simple things. And everybody has all four dharmas. Everybody. Because there's four purposes in life, and we all have to meet these purposes, these requirements. But one of them is going to be more dominant. One of them is going to call to us more profoundly, so that we say, oh, that's me. I can relate to that. And that's kind of like your spiritual learning style. So when you follow that path, it's less confusing for you. You don't have to jump around here to here to there to whatever. You just go, oh, this is what this path does for me. I'll just follow this path. Now, of course, no two people are going to go down the same path the same way. Everybody's got different footsteps. It's a very wide path, you know. So you can't compare yourself to other people. Your purpose is your unique purpose. Your path is your unique path. But we have a lot in common with people who are on that same path as us, and we can learn from each other.
Absolutely. And I will say, Lisa, I noticed one of the things, because I did go on and take the quiz, and what's interesting is there was a speaker that I was listening to actually just a little bit earlier today that was talking about that those things that we sort of have been running from or hiding in the back of the closet or maybe not wanting to deal with are going to come up at some point because there's lessons there for us. There's opportunities there for us. And I learned that for me, the most powerful sort of path is also the one that sometimes, I don't want to say that I tend to avoid at times, but because of the power that there is in that particular path, that I really sometimes am hesitant to approach it because it's like, wow, that can be really intense sometimes. And so I thought that was really, really interesting because it's an opportunity to step into that and say, oh, now I understand a little bit more about why that has the power for me that it does and how to approach it in a more helpful way that feels very comfortable and very exciting and makes me curious to say, well, what's this about? And, oh, okay, now that I understand a little bit more about my learning style, so much of maybe why something affected me the way it did or why I processed something the way that I did made so much more sense. And so I love the way that you sort of categorize things to help people have a better understanding of themselves and how to operate within the world. Because I think that that's such a significant thing that you'll have people who, and this applies to even with some of the things with What's Your Dosha Baby, certain personality types might work really well in, say, a Monday through Friday 9-to-5 job, and they might really thrive in that environment where there's certain maybe artistic types that they would just rather do anything than go to an office for 8 hours a day. Mm-hmm. And I think that what you're addressing in this book is so helpful in helping people come to not only an understanding, but an acceptance and even a love of that part of themselves to say, well, now I understand why my personality is like that because, wait a second, I'm more suited for this over here, and that's why my passion leads me over here. That's why I have these ideas in this area. I'd love to have you talk a little bit about that and articulate that for us, Lisa.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. You know, some of us are more led by our heart. Some of us are more led by our head. You know, some of us need time to marinate, to sink in, to think about things, and other of us are impulsive. So knowing your own style is going to help you in every aspect of your life. And at the same time, it's going to help you relate to other people because you can say, okay, well, this is how I am, and this is how she is, and this is where we're kind of in conflict, but I can't change her. I'm going to let her be who she is and do what she needs to do, and I'm going to work with that. So it's helpful for us in that aspect of our life as well. I mean, relationships are a huge part of our life.
Oh, my goodness. And I think that that's such a significant point, too. So let's talk about this a little bit, Lisa. In case there's somebody just tuning in, we're here with Lisa Coffey, www.coffeytalk. And we're talking about her new book, What's Your Dharma, Baby? And Lisa, so let's break this down for people a little bit about how this is helpful for them. Because I think sometimes when you get into the Indian words and that sort of thing, people start to say, oh, and they have a misconception about maybe what it's about.
Right.
So let's address that first of all. I know that I have colleagues of mine sometimes when I'll mention these things and I go into the words like dharma and dosha and that sort of thing, their eyes just sort of glaze over, or if you're on the telephone, you can sort of just hear like they're like, uh-huh, I have no idea, or they're like, that just sounds like a bunch of ridiculousness to me. Let's share with people a little bit about how can you make that significant for them, that they can sort of cut through the terminology and really resonate with what this is about.
Okay, so picture it this way. There are four paths in life, four purposes that we all come here into this life that we need to accomplish, right? To love, to serve, to know, and to be.
Oh, beautiful.
And so we're all going to learn these things. We're going to learn what it means to know, what it means to be, what it means to serve, what it means to love. That's very important for all of us. But it's very hard to learn them all at the same time simultaneously. So one of them is going to call to us more strongly. And we're going to find that path and go on that path. And that way we learn everything else along the way as well.
Oh, how beautifully put. That was so eloquent and just so simple and powerful. Thank you for sharing that.
So I think we should look at each of the four dharmas, the four paths, so that people kind of get an idea of where they might fit in, of which one might be for them.
Great. Let's do that.
Okay, so the first one is bhakti yoga. And this is the path of love and devotion. And when you're on the path of bhakti yoga, your purpose is to love. So the symbolism that I came up with for this is the heart. That's the icon. The heart is two halves that come together to make a whole. The heart is in the center of our chest, and the chakra is green, and so I made the color green to go with it. Love is about growing and fresh and new, and it's always abundant. Like green is a very abundant color.
Oh, that's beautiful. I
so
love
the
that.
Yeah, the path of bhakti yoga helps us. When you're on the path of bhakti yoga, you're the kind of person who really values relationship, who really understands love. And you know that when you look at a person, it's not the person that you're loving. It is the divinity in that person that you're loving. It's not the clothes they're wearing. It's not their hairstyle. It's not the color of their eyes. It's the divinity within that person, the spirit of that person is what you love. And it's easy to love your child, your spouse, your best friend, you know, your mother, whatever it is. But taking that leap to say, okay, now I'm going to see the divinity within the guy at the grocery store, the homeless guy on the corner, the criminal, this person I hate, my boss. But the bhakti yoga, that's the lesson that the bhakti yogas learn and practice. The bhakti yoga knows that love is the only thing that is real. And this is very similar to the philosophy in A Course in Miracles. A Course in Miracles says there's only two things in life, fear and love. And fear is really just a lack of love. So really, there's only love. Love is the only thing that's real. So live your life in love, and everything that you do from that place of love. Think of, you know, when you're making choices, is this what love would do? Is this the loving thing to do? That's kind of how bhakti yogas are, you know?
So Lisa, is it safe to say then, so let's say someone takes the quiz and it comes back and it says, okay, that this is their particular path. Is it safe to say then areas that might feel challenging for them or opportunities for growth are going to come maybe in the form of that they could have a really annoying supervisor that's just sort of driving them crazy, and the opportunity is to step into the space of that same divinity that they recognize in their spouse or that they recognize in their children, of applying that same thing in that situation. Is it safe to say that that's a little bit of how it works?
Yes. And at the same time, you can apply each of the different yogas or dharmas depending on what your personality type is. You know, if you have that annoying boss and you're a bhakti, you ask yourself, how can I love this person? How can I see the love in this person? How do I remember that this is God walking around in disguise like everybody else? The karma yogi would say, how can I serve this person? What can I do to help? Recognizing that it's not your fault, but where can you make things easier for this person so that they're not so grumpy or whatever. You know, the karma yogi seeks to serve, to do the work that needs to be done, to separate out the emotions, whereas the bhakti might be more devoted to this person, even though they're in an awkward situation. The karma yogi is looking to serve this person. So there's two totally different things, and just do the work that can be needs to be done without bringing in the emotions. And then the jhana yogi, which is to know, would look at this person and more like analyze them, because jhana yogi is, you know, the knowledge of oneness, and they take away the veil of illusion, and they just discriminate and say, okay, so why is this happening? And let's figure out this mystery. And is this person psychotic? And as I'm going to accept them as they are, because this is just the way it is. And they come from a very much more mental place where they think it through and they go, okay, what is the best strategy for dealing with this person? Okay, well, if I'm just put a smile on my face and bite the bullet, then they're going to be fine. So that's the jhana yogi. And then the Raja Yogi has a whole other approach to dealing with this person. The Raja Yogi is going to say, I'm just going to take a deep breath and go into my practice and know that this too will pass, and that this is, you know, I'm going to come from a place of balance, and then the energy around me is going to be balanced and everything's going to be okay. You know, whole different way of dealing with it.
Oh, my gosh, that's awesome, Lisa, and really helps put things into perspective. Would love to have you share with us a little bit more in detail, kind of like with what you did with the Bhakti Yoga, the other areas, so people have an idea and can get a little bit of a sense of maybe what they identify with sharing with us, just a little bit more about what the other yogas are about.
Sure. Okay, so Karma Yoga is the path of work and service. This is activity. This is action. So the purpose of the karma yogi is to serve. And the symbolism I came up with for this is the sun, because the sun serves all of us indiscriminately, everybody equally. We're all, you know, have access to the sun. The sun serves all of us. Doesn't care who we are, where we came from, how much money we have, whatever. The sun is there for each of us equally. Karma in Sanskrit comes from the root kri, which means to do. The law of karma, a law says that there is a predictable sequence of events, cause and effect. Karma tells us that it's not just our action, but the result of our action as well. So that we have cause and effect, and that effect becomes a cause and causes another effect. And cause and effect, and cause and effect, and effect and cause, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So the Buddha said, do good and be good, and this will take you to freedom. So the karma yoga is actually the science of work. How can we work to best serve? How can our work make a difference in the world?
Excellent. Okay.
And where bhakti yoga is all about the heart and the feelings and the love, karma yoga is more about the hands. Serving with our hands and serving everyone, because the divine is within each of them as it is within ourselves. It's having integrity. It's seeing work as, first of all, seeing work as a selfless activity, giving up the attachment to reward, not working for the paycheck, working for the sake of work, doing what needs to be done. And then after that, after we can accomplish that and understand that work is a selfless activity, then we work as worship. Now we're not just working for Bank of America, we're working for God. We're working as an offering of love. We're doing our best. We're putting ourselves into our work. We're working as meditation. Time flies by. We're talking to our customers and relating to them and not just going through the motions.
Oh, beautiful.
And then the third thing is, when we get to that level, that God is working through us. God as the worker, as understanding the oneness in the world and in our activity, knowing that we are a part of the whole. So when we get to that point, then we're filled with gratitude, and it doesn't matter what work we're doing that work with gratitude.
Oh, my gosh. beautiful. I like that very much.
Yeah, I like it too.
Yeah, that's really, really, really inspirational, I think, especially for people out there maybe in a job so much that they're not crazy about. Very inspirational to sort of see the higher purpose.
Yeah, and that's like what I was saying. It's not necessarily what you do, but how you do it. What your mindset is, what your perspective is, you know, because no matter what job we're in, we have the opportunity to love. We have the opportunity to serve.
Absolutely. Lisa, we have about 5 minutes left and would love to go through the other two really quickly if we can do it.
Okay, sure. So jhana yoga is to know. And the symbolism I came up with for this is the key, because it's like the key to unlock the mysteries of life. And the color is blue, and blue is for clarity, and it's that, you know, the throat chakra where we express ourselves and everything. So the jhana uses the powers of the intellect to achieve mastery over the mind, the mastery over the senses, the emotions, the distractions, you know, so that that boss doesn't just rile us. We can think about it and go, okay, it's not about me. He's having a bad day or whatever it is. So they're looking at the difference between conditional reality and big R reality. Is it, you know, we're watching a movie and we see these characters, but we know it's not the zookeeper on the screen. We know it's Matt Damon. So we know the difference, and it's just keeping that in mind at all times. So it's using our intellect to see the divine in all of us. And then the last one is Raja Yoga. And with Raja Yoga, the purpose is to be. The symbolism I came up with for this is the lotus. A lotus is a very spiritual symbol. There's many petals, and they all turn inward. It's also the color of purple, which is the crown chakra, which is our highest, links us from body and mind and spirit, which links us. And the Raja Yoga used to be referred to as the yoga of psychology. It's the science of meditation. All our lives, ever since we've been born, we've been trained to focus externally. And now we need to train our minds to focus internally once again. And so that's what Raja Yoga is all about. This is, Patanjali had these 8 steps that he came up with. And yoga is one of them. The asanas, pranayama, the breath, self-control, self-restraint. So that's all a part of where the yoga that we know comes in. So if you love yoga and you go to your yoga class all the time and you meditate, you just may be a Raja Yogi.
Wow. Beautiful. Oh, my goodness. Well, what an excellent and quick and clear synopsis, Lisa. I wish that we had a couple more hours to talk to you about the book and all the great things that you're doing. As we sort of wrap up here, are there any upcoming appearances or things that you would like our listeners to know, or specific things that you'd like for them to check out on the website?
Well, if you go to whatsyourdharma.com, this week only, we're having a big promotional launch. So when you get the book on Amazon, you can come back to the page, put in your order number, and you'll get a free video, which is this 20-minute video. I interviewed Houston Smith, Neil Donald Walsh, Barbara Marx Hubbard, Kathy Ireland, Chip Coffee, a whole host of famous people about what their dharma is, and it's fascinating. So you get that. Plus, you get a free ebook from me about feng shui. You get a bunch of coupons. You get, like, so much extra stuff. The book is only $10 on Amazon right now, so it's, like, such a bargain. You get all this other stuff with it. So it's only this week.
Excellent, excellent. And for anyone just tuning in, it's What's Your Dharma, and that's whatsyourdharma.com. Definitely check that out. And Lisa, is there any sort of mantra that serves you very well, or anything that you feel inspired to leave our listeners with as a word of wisdom this evening?
My favorite quote is by Ralph Waldo Emerson. He said, "Nothing great was ever achieved without enthusiasm." Whatever you do, do it with all your heart. Have enthusiasm, and you can't help but be successful.
Oh, beautiful. Lisa, you just are such a gem, and just it's always such an honor and pleasure to welcome you on the program. Thank you for bringing your inspiration and your enthusiasm and your wisdom and just sharing things in a way that makes it so practically applicable for us that we can take it out immediately and just apply it in our own lives. You're just such a blessing and just have such an uplifting spirit. Thank you so much.
Oh, thank you. I feel the same way about you.
Well, thank you, thank you, thank you. And thank you, listeners, for joining us here on Unique YOU, Unique Life, starring you.